The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Hello, everybody. I'm Bill Buckmaster. On the other side of the glass, I'm alone, yes, here in the studio, but on the other side of the glass is my buddy, engineer, producer, Tom Fairbanks.
Alone, but not alone.
Yeah, we're practicing the safe distancing while bringing people together in the Green Thing Zocalo Village studio. It is Thursday, April 16th, 2020. Tom, you do not have one of those wristbands or collars that they were talking about at the top of the news in CBS News, where in Detroit at the auto plants.
That's the picture that flashed in my mind, a electrical collar around your neck that would shock you if you got too close to somebody.
If you're within 6 feet of somebody, they have these wristbands that will shock you. Step away, step away.
In fairness, I think it's supposedly to buzz you, but who knows? Yeah. If your hands are wet from washing them, that wristband could shock you.
Well, crazy times we live in as the spread of the new coronavirus continues. Researchers at the University of Arizona Water and Energy Sustainable Technology Center are using municipal wastewater now to monitor the incidence of the virus in communities across the United States. Let's welcome now on the live line Dr. Chuck Gerba. Dr. Gerba is a professor of epidemiology and biostatistics in the Department of Environmental Science at the University of Arizona. Dr. Gerba has an international reputation for his methodologies for pathogen detection in water and food and pathogen occurrence in households and risk assessment. Dr. Gerba, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing fine. Keeping busy.
I bet you are. What's the latest on this program to monitor CV in communities across the United States? Why is this important?
Well, actually, you know, the use of monitoring wastewater for looking at the amount of disease incidence in a community has been known for quite a while. Actually, it's been used for more than 30 years by World Health Organization and various governments to try to identify where cases are of poliovirus still in the world, because they have found out that you can find one person in 10,000 that's infected in a community. So it's a very sensitive technique. What it is you excrete the virus, and in this the new coronavirus is one of those, in your feces or even in your urine, actually. And it ends up in the wastewater. And so you can actually detect it in the wastewater of a community. So you don't really need to go to door-to-door clinical specimens to determine whether you actually have cases of this virus or any other organism that might be affecting humans in the wastewater. So it's a good idea. Is it in the community? Is it still there? Is it disappearing? Is it going down or up?
Do you have any preliminary data for the Tucson area, Chuck?
We have been actually identified it in the raw wastewater already about almost 3 weeks ago. It started showing up in it in the wastewater. But other investigators around the country too have identified it in several other cities in the wastewater around the country.
Do we know? But you haven't been able to determine how it's growing or the impact in the community?
No, not yet. We really are analyzing the data to see, like, if the social impact, distancing that you were talking about, has that had an impact, an increase or decrease of the amount of virus we're seeing in the community? Because it is a measure we're hoping to see if different interventions here will reduce the amount of infection within the community.
Dr. Gerba, this must be a fascinating time for yourself, a microbiologist. We're seeing something we've never seen in our lifetimes. When it's all said and done, it will be interesting to compare Sweden, which has decided to go against the grain and basically go with the herd mentality and let it pretty much go through the community. It will be interesting to compare Sweden to the social distancing measures that have been taken in the United States and other places in Europe. Some of your thoughts, please.
Yeah, I think that might make a difference. You know, cultural habits may make a difference here. You know, already about 40% of the Swedish people work at home rather than commuting to work every day. So they do a lot more of that than we do in the United States currently, and that make a difference too. In how we gather, how we socialize may make a difference. It's different in different cultures. You know, in some cultures, the entire community family often gets together on the weekend or comes into a household. I've been in some cultures where it's very common on the weekend or the evening, you might have 20 people in your living room meeting on a regular basis in that, where that doesn't happen as many in other cultures. So cultural habits may make a difference too. It's going to be interesting to see how cultural habits might change in the United States because of this and how we gather in groups, because it's different in different societies behave much differently. So it's going to be interesting to see. Now, what we're doing here in Tucson, looking at the wastewater is being done now around the world, we're coordinating efforts in different parts of the world together, investigators, to see how useful a tool this might be. And we're hoping maybe we'll see differences in different regions of the world based on interventions or cultural habits, like in Sweden. Will it really make a difference as much? We'll see, because we're hoping to be able to correlate the amount of infection in the community with the amount of virus we're seeing in the wastewater.
Even before all this started, you were really out front on the importance of washing your hands effectively and hand washing versus alcohol-based hand sanitizers. Are they roughly equal in your opinion?
Yes, they are. They're very equal in terms of killing viruses and removing them from your hands in that. Now, the Centers for Disease Control recommends that you wash your hands. And if you don't have water available, use a hand sanitizer. But they're both really equally effective. The main thing with hand washing, you got to do it right. The Centers for Disease Control recommends that you wash your hands for at least 20 seconds with soap and water. You know, interesting, in our studies in Tucson, we monitored people in public facilities, and most people only washed their hands for 11 seconds. And only half the people who went to the sink actually end up using soap. So you have to remember, it's really important to use soap and water and wash your hands for at least 11 seconds. Now, the hand sanitizers work quite well. The alcohol causes a rapid evaporation on your hands, which kills the viruses, particularly this new coronavirus. It has a fatty-like substances layer in it, and it makes it more susceptible to alcohol, which dissolves that fatty layer. So that's why hand sanitizers are effective. The other reason I like the hand sanitizers, and we studied them a lot on their efficacy in that, is you can bring them anywhere you want. Like if you go to a mall, shopping mall, you can sanitize your hands very easily. Or if you take a bus, you can sanitize your hands because you can carry it with you in a bottle. One of the things we learned too is in the home, the good idea to have a hand sanitizer right at the door, because if you have the virus on your hands, you can eliminate it very quickly. That way you keep it from moving around the home. We found that you walk into a home with a virus on your hands, you'll end up contaminating up to 90% of the surfaces within about 4 hours that you commonly touch in a home.
What are the hot spots as far, you know, we've heard about pumping gas. That's certainly got to be a kind of a petri dish for coronavirus. You got that. You've got the ATM machine. Any thoughts on that?
We've studied a number of those surfaces in that, particularly touch screens. We did a big survey recently on bacteria and viruses on touch screens. These are the ones where you like ATMs, self-checkout counters, screens that may be present in restaurants are becoming popular for ordering, looking at menus, or entertaining yourself. It's quite interesting. These self-checkout computer screens in that, we found viruses that cause respiratory infections, not the COVID-19, but other respiratory viruses on about 20% of these touch screens. So they seem to be fairly common. And you find fecal bacteria on about 15% of the touch screens because they get contaminated. You have large numbers of people touching them, particularly in these self-checkout counter screens and that. So if you're going to use any kind of a screen like that, always try to use a hand sanitizer right afterwards because they got much more contaminated, we realized, when we looked at them extensively. We did this around the country, too. So we were quite proud. We looked at several hundred touch screens in that. But you really don't have to reach out very far to touch anyone today. You just got to use a self-checkout touch screen.
Dr. Gerba, stick around. I'm going to take a break right here. We'll be back with Dr. Chuck Gerba of the University of Arizona. I've got so many more questions for him that we will resume our conversation. But right now I want to tell everybody about Mona's Danish Bakery. Northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. They are open for business. They open at 6:30 in the morning. They close at 2 in the afternoon. You can walk in and order your bakery goods and then take them with you. You can call ahead at 579-1959 if you didn't have a chance to write it down. It's at monasdanishbakery.com, their number. Some people like to call ahead, say, I'll be coming by. I'd like to pick up some breakfast, or I'd like to have some lunch, or perhaps have your breads waiting, all those wonderful freshly baked breads. So Mona's Danish Bakery, adapting to our new reality, I guess if there is a new normal, and they're doing quite well. They're continuing to serve outstanding bakery goods. I love a couple of their, in particular, the peanut butter cookies are fantastic. And the macaroons would be a nice recommendation for you if you're looking for something sweet. We'll take our break right here. It's Buckmaster in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. We continue with Dr. Gerba. If you'd like to ask him a question, 790-2040, our live line number. Be right back.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
This is Bill Buckmaster encouraging you to fly from Tucson International Airport. When you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. A new study shows the Tucson Airport Authority's annual economic impact is $7.4 billion, with almost $1 billion of that from visitors flying into the airport. Fly Tucson, and airlines will respond with more flights, bringing more visitors, benefiting all of us. Type in TUS when you book your next flight and fly Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority and its member jurisdictions have completed more than 850 transportation projects or service improvements across the region to date. The RTA is a state-established political subdivision and taxing district. The RTA's current half-cent sales tax funds the 20-year plan through June 2026. And the RTA is laying the foundation to develop a new plan. To learn more, please visit www.rtanext.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Hansen from Bon Voyage Travel.
And this is Matt Russell from the Buckmaster Show.
Matt, did you hear that Travel and Leisure magazine just ranked the Douro Valley as a top 50 spot for world travel?
Yes, so how about Portugal and Spain for my next culinary and cocktail cruise?
Let's do it on the Douro River aboard the new Ama Douro ship from Ama Waterways.
I'll need a chef's table dinner, winery tours, and other private excursions.
Matt, consider it done.
Thanks, Ryan. Portugal and Spain, here we come. Go to bvtravel.com to learn more.
During the coronavirus crisis, Vero Amore restaurants in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana are still open for takeout and home delivery. You can still enjoy all your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza. They're all available for takeout and home delivery. More at veroamorepizza.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
It's easy being green. Promote wind, install solar, drive electric cars, ban mining. Wait a minute! You can't ban mining! Green is good, but hey, no can do without the metals green products need from mining. If you ban mining, you'll ban everything green. And today's minds are on board, researching technologies that provide critical materials for a greener world. Being Green, another miracle from mining. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Dr. Chuck Gerba with us from the University of Arizona, where he is a microbiologist and professor of environmental science in the College of Agriculture and Life Sciences. We have so many questions for you in so little time. Tom, my fantastic engineer producer, Dr. Gerba, wonders about these magazines and doctor's offices. I wonder if we'll start to see those disappear as one of the outgrowths of the CV.
That's kind of interesting, too. We've studied actually how well viruses get on your hands when you touch different surfaces. And actually, paper is one of the least. Usually only get about maybe 1-2% of the viruses on paper on your hands when you touch it. But if you touch something like stainless steel or plastic, you get 70-50% of the viruses on your hands. Even though those surfaces might get contaminated, like paper, cloth material, they're so porous that the viruses tend to go into the pores and that and don't come on your off your hands very well. So you rule of thumb, the easier it is to clean, the more likely you're to pick up a virus when you touch a surface. So usually your risk of touching cloth materials generally, like clothing or envelopes, paper and that, are very low because the transfer to your hand is very low.
The four types of coronavirus that cause the common cold every year also wane in warmer weather. Do you expect something similar to happen with this coronavirus?
Well, that's certainly the big hope, is that when we get to the warmer temperatures, the virus levels and the infection level decrease very dramatically. The coronaviruses in general like high humidities and cooler temperatures. And so we're really hoping that when those come about, that the incidence will decrease very well. The reason is the virus tends to survive less in air and on surfaces at low relative humidities.
So that perhaps when we start hitting maybe even 90 degrees next week, that could bode well for us.
It would. The expectation here is the virus would be less transmitted because of its the higher temperatures and the low relative humidity we have here in Arizona. Boy, that's certainly my hope.
And it's interesting that your colleagues, these are microbiologists at the University of Oregon and the University of California, Davis, are out with recommendations about opening windows, Dr. Gerba, in buildings, including our homes, that may prevent the spread of the CV.
Yeah, I think they're hoping that, well, maybe you'll let in more UV light and increase the circulation out the windows, and that may be beneficial to some extent too. Of course, air circulation by normal vents, we found pretty good in our studies looking at virus movement, and that usually airflow, at least in commercial buildings, is adequate enough to move the virus out of the building fairly quickly.
All right, Ingrid has called us and she has a question, and I believe she would like a clarification on a particular point. Go ahead, Ingrid. You're with Dr. Gerba.
Good afternoon. Sir, good. I think I heard you say that this particular virus likes cold and moisture.
It likes high moisture. You're correct.
Because we were told that it likes cold and does not like moisture at another time.
Mm-hmm. The recent data indicates that it does like the higher relative humidities. When I mean higher relative humidities, I should say 40-60% and higher, where it doesn't like the 20% or at range relative humidities. It's more relative humidity, moisture in the air.
Okay.
Which is what we have here, the dry air. And also you talked about paper. Now, when you bring your mail in, you said that it gets trapped in the grooves of your skin. Supposing you bring in your mail and you put it on your desk.
Well, it actually gets trapped in the pores in the paper. Paper is very porous.
Mm-hmm.
So it generally gets trapped in there and doesn't get transferred to your skin.
Okay. Thank you, Thank you, Ingrid. What about these reports that the virus, about the origin of the virus, that it got out through an accident at a bioweapons laboratory in Wuhan? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, there's no hard evidence for that. You know, that's been a lot of speculation in that. I think as people analyze the genetics further of this virus, we'll know more about that. But it's that's been a lot of speculation on that, but no real hard evidence that that's the case.
Dr. Gerber, how will our lives change through all of this? Have you thought about that?
I think people are going to be much more conscious about social distancing, cultural habits. I imagine hand washing and use of hand sanitizer is going to increase rather dramatically on this. I think we'll have a lot more awareness about good hygiene than in the past.
Why were we caught napping? Some of the big companies like Clorox, they just couldn't keep up with the demand. I haven't seen any wipes like Clorox wipes in the stores in a long time.
I think what it is they were normal to usual consumer use of these products, and the sudden demand from the healthcare industry, I think, was unexpected for people. In that, I think that was the big surprise, that how well they were taken up and realized how important they are, and I think that was really overlooked.
How have you changed your particular lifestyle when you go to the market or when you go out and about? How have you changed your lifestyle?
Well, I always make sure I bring a hand sanitizer with me now. And anytime I go to those places, I use it. I double check my pockets to make sure I bring it with me now. And I used to not do that.
I have a story in front of me about bacteria. You're quoted in this. It was a CNN story about bacteria likely hiding in your household washing machine. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, most people don't realize that when you wash clothes, you leave some of the bacteria in there, because most people use cold water washers now, and you really need the hot water to kill the bacteria very effectively. And these front loaders in particular, you get some water you can't see retaining in the machine, so you get bacteria in the laundry. So you have to remember, if you do your underwear, don't do your handkerchiefs in the next load. Otherwise, you're going to be blowing your nose what was in your underwear, from what we could figure out.
Oh, boy. Before we let you go, let's go back to the lead topic with you, and that is the research going on that you're involved with as the spread of the coronavirus continues, using municipal wastewater to monitor the instance of the virus in the communities across the United States. When do you think we're going to have some better data on this for the Tucson area and determining maybe we've reached a peak? Perhaps could we tell that through the wastewater?
Yeah, that's what we were hoping to see. I think we're going to probably know within the next 2 to 3 weeks. We're starting to get some evidence in that. So I think we'll be able to say something in about 3 weeks.
And you would go by, obviously, you said it was first detected, and that would be your baseline, right, the date that it was first detected?
Right, that was March 19th.
All right, Dr. Gerber, I know you have another appointment, so we're going to let you go here a couple of minutes early before we go to the CBS News. Thank you very much, Chuck Gerber.
Sure. Take care. Be safe.
Thanks. Chuck Gerber from the University of Arizona. And that's really fascinating research that's going on that he and his team are doing about this checking out municipal wastewater to monitor the instance of the virus. And he thinks they'll have some really good information about whether we can, through that research, determine the peak of the coronavirus. At this point right now, Tom, do you remember the old, well, you're really too young to remember the Victory Gardens.
Oh, you're so kind.
Yeah, because those were first launched to feed America.
Listen, Bill.
During World War One,
my parents had World War II military issue V-disc records. And yeah, Victory Gardens is something that, even though I was really young, I was around at that time.
Well, guess what? They're doing it again, and one of our great sponsors, Green Things in Zocalo Village, has everything you need to get up to speed. They have something called the Green Lady Hydro business there. And in that business, Green Things caters to the small home grower with ready-to-made hydro kits, easy to assemble. They can walk you through the whole process. And you'll need nutrients for your garden, and they have all the good ones, the better-known organic brands like Roots Organic and Ocean Forest. Green Things, located at 3384 East River Road. It's also home to Zocalo Village. Right now, lots of people going by Green Things because they are planting their own little vegetable gardens. And boy, if you need any advice, they've got it at Green Things on their beautiful site there. 13 acres, plenty of room for social distancing. Go in, get your little hydro kit, and they'll tell you how to assemble it. Go home and start your own little victory over virus gardens. There you are. It's the
or did I hear somebody refer to it as a survival garden?
Well, it could be. I mean, could come in handy here.
There's probably lots of things that could be called.
Right. The 1030, The Voice, the trusted source for news talk. CBS News is next on The Buckmaster Show.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops, craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year. And if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. We're at about, we're coming up already now on 12:36 here on a beautiful day. I keep hearing that more and more people noticing the skies seem bluer. Probably. I know. But there may be something to that, Tom Fairbanks, because of the less, you know, auto traffic and stuff.
Yeah. And as you look to the west, we're not seeing those kind of brownishy kind of color off on the horizon.
Sure.
So that's good,
makes
too.
Makes sense. Anthony Jimeno is with us. Anthony, a sports journalist who has spent much of the past couple of decades covering University of Arizona athletics. He covered the football beat for the Arizona Daily Star, and then before that, the Tucson Citizen. Anthony is senior editor for Lindy's Football Annuals, and he is the co-founder of a very popular local blog, which has done really well over the last few years, allsportstucson.com. He's the co-author of a book on Arizona basketball, 100 Things Arizona Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. Anthony, how are you, sir?
I'm hanging in there, Bill. How about you?
Hanging in there day to day, hour by hour is kind of the way I'm taking it. And I'm very, very curious on your take. First of all, I know you have an early deadline at Lindy's Football Annuals. How are they handling this uncertainty? Because let's face it, AG, there's very little that is certain about the upcoming college football season.
That's a great question, and one that our publisher, Lindy Davis, and he's been in business for 38 years now, kind of as a easier classic American small business guy, proprietor, had a dream to start a sports magazine, and it stuck with it now for almost four decades. And we've had a lot of discussions about that, and he intends to publish college editions, NFL editions, fantasy football editions, and he created a kind of a revamped schedule, pushed some things back a little bit. But from that perspective, he believes he will have a window to sell college football magazine. And part of the reason is the NCAA, the universities, they are going to try everything they can to get some sort of football season going. Maybe it'll be delayed. It might be shortened. But I think they will, there's high motivation because there's billions and billions of dollars involved. So that said, I don't think, you know, unless something changes in the world, which is entirely possible, of course, I don't think it'll be a case of come June 1st, they will be saying, the NCAA or whoever will be saying, nope, no college football season this year. I mean, I think they're going to try to kick the can down the road as far as they can before making that kind of drastic decision. And that said, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I kind of go back and forth day to day between, are we going to have college football or are we going to have some kind of modified version? And a lot's going to depend on the next few months of unknowables. You know, what's the testing situation going to be like? How far down are we on the other side of this curve of positives? What's the availability of PPEs, for example? So there's a lot of questions that have to be answered. I'm kind of, you probably caught me on kind of an optimistic day. I'm not sure Arizona football is going to be hosting Hawaii in late August,
right?
You know, as it's on the schedule. But do I think there's going to be some sort of football this fall? I kind of do.
Isn't that funny? You're in a optimistic mood. I'm in an extremely pessimistic mood today. And I just woke up, I guess, on the wrong side of the bed. I've tried to keep a great attitude through all of this. I kind of went off on Facebook yesterday saying
I noticed.
Yeah, you probably noted. A lot of people have. I have 5,000 followers. And I said, okay, folks, enough is enough. It's my personal Facebook page. And I just don't want people attacking me personally or the people, my friends, who post on this. So I still have the kind of this really foul mood that is carried over from yesterday. So to hear you optimistic, it's really great, because I think that's the way all of us are. We're going, you know, somebody's...
Well, okay. Can I flip sides real quick?
Yes.
Can I feed into your negativism?
Please.
You know, I think it was... days all blurred together, right?
Yeah.
I think it was today, the L.A. mayor said that he can't see hosting sporting events, concerts, et cetera, until 2021.
I saw that, yeah.
So does that mean no USC, UCLA? And if L.A. did that, you know the Bay Area is going to do it.
Oh, yeah.
So what does that mean for Cal and Stanford? What does that mean for the Pac-12? Then where are you? I mean, I think we might be playing games without fans, although that's not ideal, but at least it'd be TV money for the conferences and the schools, mm-hmm. if that were to happen. But, you know, some things nationally and internationally are opening up. I don't know if you saw the PGA Tour said they're going to resume playing tournaments on June 11th.
Wow.
There'll be no galleries through the month of July, but they plan on putting on tournaments. The Tour de France has rescheduled. They plan on going off in late August. Very interestingly, and I know sometimes the United States response gets compared to South Korea's response, and the KBO, which is the Korean Baseball Organization, I think it is. They are planning to start preseason baseball games in about a week or so, and hope to begin the season in early May.
So Belarus and their soccer league, there'll be something other than watching.
You know, I saw a story where, you know, soon on ESPN is like desperate to get like this live Korean baseball league on all its stations, because it's a live sporting event. So you get every day, you kind of get conflicting messages about when things might get open or why things might not get open. And it's really hard to predict.
All right.
So I think you, like everybody else, will have their good days and their bad days.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of nice that you're having a good day. I really love to hear that. Tell me something. When I see schools like Boston University, which, you know, they play sports, they play football, but then when I see these stories, they're going very seriously about going all online in the fall. That's kind of a harbinger, AG, about where college football could be falling in line. If you've got a student body that's all online, you wouldn't think that they would be doing football.
That would be one you want to put into your negative column.
Yep.
Because, I mean, the story yesterday as it related to college football was that Mike Pence met with the commissioners of the 10 major football playing conferences. So the 10 conferences in the football bowl subdivision, the highest level. And basically what the commissioners told the vice president was that if the campuses aren't open, we're not doing sports, mm-hmm. you know. So, for example, and that may be some of the news that starts to come out, say, in July. Hey, we're not – you might get universities saying, yeah, we're going to stick with online classes in the fall. And, again, if that happens, that is not a positive thing for college football. College is not a good thing for college basketball. Let's go down that road, too.
Yeah, that's right.
If universities are online only in the fall again, that means you're not having basketball season in early November.
Yeah.
Right?
Wow.
Again, that may be something that gets pushed back, altered. But all options are kind of on the table right now. And like the motivation is high because there's so much money at stake. And the viability of a lot of these athletic departments, especially when you get into some of the smaller conferences, for example, your Mid-American Conference or your Mountain West conferences, who's such a large part of their revenue is tied to football.
And maybe they can't, you know, one of their meetings was that they're asking the NCAA to say, okay, if we're taking this football hit in the fall, you have to relax some of your regulations. And some of those regulations include you have to have 16 sports to be an NCAA member. So they want to cut. Basically, they're asking the NCAA, we're going to have to cut sports, and you're going to have to let us do it because we're not going to be able to afford it. So, you know, a lot of soccer programs or lacrosse programs or golf programs, those might all have to go away if the football money dries up.
All right, Anthony Gimeno, thank you very much from AllSportsTucson.com. We'll circle back with you in a while here in May and figure out if there's been any improvement in the situation. Thanks, AG.
Thanks, Bill.
Thanks a lot. I will. Anthony Gimeno. Talking about sports, what's going to happen, nobody knows. But I do know I've got Ken Scoville, the Buckmaster Show historian, on the live line talking about what it was like in the Spanish flu of 1918 here in Tucson. We'll be right back, Buckmaster, with you. During the coronavirus crisis, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is open for one-on-one appointments only by calling 795-8226 to arrange a time with Moe or Corinne. No interruptions and no other customers. Moe will even arrange a drop-off at the store's front door and coordinate a virtual design session. Moe's Gallery, Fort Lowell and Dodge, 795-8226 and moesgallery.com. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
During this coronavirus crisis, Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, is still open for takeout and home delivery only. You can get all of your favorite Noble Hops menu offerings. Come pick them up, or they'll bring them to you. So check out Noble Hops on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and online at noblehopspub.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know about my love of travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. I know you value your time and money, so it makes sense to fly Tucson with nearly 60 daily nonstop flights to major hub airports. If you're flying to another airport to take a nonstop flight, you're still making a connection and spending 4 hours on the road traveling to that other airport. That's why I fly Tucson and encourage you to do the same.
The current Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. In preparation for developing a new 20-year plan, the RTA Board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to identify priority projects based on public input. RTA member jurisdictions will submit their respective project lists by June 2020 for the CAC to consider for a future plan. To learn more, visit www.rtanext.com. Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios on 1030 The Voice. I don't know about you, but I'm dreaming of the day when we can pile in the car and get the heck out of Dodge for a while. And if you're thinking about that, and I'm sure a lot of people are, how about Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico? Just a 3-hour drive from Tucson, and you'll be in a beautiful area of the southwestern portion of New Mexico. They did announce over in Silver City, and want to pass this along, that their big event, the Silver City Blues Festival, will move to totally online. That event is over the, traditionally, over the Memorial Day weekend. They bring in some of the top blues performers in the world. It's a huge deal, and they announced, unfortunately, that because of the coronavirus, they are going to postpone the event. Well, actually, instead of the event, it will be all online. You can watch it at SilverCityBluesFestival.org. For more information about planning a trip to Silver City, southwestnewmexico.org for all of your planning needs. Our historian on the Buckmaster Show is Ken Scoville, one of two dozen regular contributors to the program. Ken, how are you?
Oh, I'm fine. I am getting a little cabin fever also.
I bet you are. Where would you like to go? Visit some of the parks, national parks?
National parks, and I was planning a big trip to New York this summer, but guess what?
Yeah, well, that, I mean, it would have to be, to be kind of in the ballpark, I'd say late July or August. Who knows?
Oh,
but,
yeah.
But it might be a safer bet, like I'm thinking about some of the closer national parks, so we can at least carve out some semblance of kind of a getaway. So that's what we're kind of thinking about at the Buckmaster household. What's the difference, Ken, between the Spanish flu pandemic that raced around the world and, of course, hit here in Tucson compared to the current coronavirus pandemic?
Well, as I thought about this, I want to start with a quote that's attributed to Mark Twain. History doesn't repeat itself, but it often rhymes. And there's lots of rhymes with this. And just to give you a sense, one of the first consistencies and connections between the two is we think it, the Spanish flu began in Spain, but I've seen reports maybe not. But this, people in Spain wanted to keep it quiet because they were worried about the tourism.
Huh.
And so now we're getting this kind of thing about maybe we don't want to tell people. And then the other thing was bad timing. World War One was going on, and they didn't want to distract the troops, and they didn't want that to become an issue. So it wasn't necessarily communicated to the troops.
What happened? Go ahead, Ken.
And I was going to just say, the other thing with this, as troops were coming back, whether they were injured or whatever, they're coming packed in on all these boats coming back. So they're all getting sick. And then they come home and everybody wants to see them. So it just becomes the big gateway for the flu, the Spanish flu.
And then different cities had different protocols for quarantines and social distancing, didn't they?
Yes, and you see the same evolution where, first of all, well, maybe it's not going to be such a big deal. And in some ways, the spring of 1918, when it started happening, was not as bad. And maybe this is something for all of us to think about. The second incarnation in the fall was much worse, partly, again, triggered because once the war was over, everybody came home. So that just super turbocharged all of this. And how is it it starts connecting with Tucson? Because I think we benefited a little bit for being out in the boonies, just like we seem to be benefiting so far today about this.
Was there some kind of a civic strategy here in town, Ken, in 1918?
Oh, sure. And again, people were concerned and aware about it, or at least rumors about it in the spring. But by the fall, you see the same evolution of things that now we're going to see. And in fact, the mayor at the time said, we've got to stop, as I said here in this, we've got to stop these any kind of meetings. We're going to close public schools. And even and kids had to stay home and stay within their yard or their parents would get written up. We were going to close the all the schools, picture houses, as they would call them. And I thought another indicator would be pool room. We didn't think about that. That was an important venue. And then in October, the University of Arizona would close.
Hmm.
But in that time, in 1918, they decided to keep all the students on campus, and Bear Down Gym would actually become a set-up hospital.
So Bear Down Gym had been built by that time in 1918?
It references the gym, and I don't think we had a gym before, but at least in the newspaper articles, it referenced that the gymnasium was turned into an emergency hospital. Huh. So it might have been another building. I'd have to check on that. And then we get this decree that everybody's got to wear a mask. And again, this idea of rhyming. At first, we didn't do the mask, and then by November, everybody of you had to go out or shop, and realizing, again, people that earned a living to support their families, they were allowed to keep working. But everybody had to wear a mask.
Do you have any idea, school, then, so that whole year the school was closed at the University of Arizona, from the October of 1918?
October to at least the spring semester, and possibly a little longer.
Hmm. Well, how bad was the death toll here? Of course, it was a very small community at the time, but...
Right. And again, like everything, we're re-looking, and people have been doing some research on this, needless to say, because of our current pandemic. But we think that 6,000 people died in Arizona. Now, I didn't see a quote for Tucson, but given we were the biggest place, I would probably think we were up in the thousands, which, given the population of maybe 20,000 or so, 24,000, that was a significant amount of death. And Native Americans would impact them tremendously, as have most things related to disease. 4,000 deaths, they think, for Native Americans in the state of Arizona.
Wow. Well, you really have to wonder, Ken Scoville, the impact of all of this, how it will affect our major industry, tourism, and everything else. Some of your thoughts on that.
Oh, and again, I can tell you, I had quite a few walking tours canceled and a couple other things. So this is going to take a while, and I think we really have to get this testing, and it looks like there's a new, very quick test for this. For people to become comfortable to go travel and do things, we really have to have a handle on testing. And I think this is going to, in fact, there's someone article in one of the papers, current papers, that this may be just a lost year. As we look back at this, we're going to think of it as a lost year. So it's going to be character building, as I sort of like to reference.
I know the cruise industry has already declared 2020 is a lost year. And
but you can imagine everybody's going to be hesitant to go start traveling again because nobody wants to get sick out of town. And I'm a big booster of tourism.
Me too.
That's something I've been...
Me
35
too.
Years I've given tours and things.
But. Yeah, travel's my touchstone. That's what kind of keeps my stress down, planning for trips. So this has been kind of hard on me.
Right. And every year for the last, 20-plus years, I go to a different city for the 4th of July.
Mm.
And I don't know if I'm going to make it this year. We'll just see.
Well, where could you get in the car and... Well, maybe drive north to, I don't know where you would go.
Yeah, especially if you want a fireworks show and maybe, I was thinking close, and I've gone there before. The Hollywood Bowl does a wonderful 4th of July concert and fireworks, but that's too crowded.
Yeah. All right, Ken Scoville, stay well, my friend. We'll talk to you soon.
I'm trying.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks very much.
Ken Scoville is the historian for the Buckmaster Show. Always interesting talking to Ken, reflecting on the past. Coming up, Dave Ramsey with his very popular show on money. He's got some great ideas on how to survive these very difficult times, and he's very outspoken about it, and it's a very entertaining way, the way he puts the whole thing together. Tomorrow, we have, for our Friday Focus interview, we have the police chief, Chris Magnus, the chief here in Tucson. We'll hear how all of this CV stuff has affected his department. That's tomorrow on Buckmaster. On behalf of Tom Fairbanks, my engineer producer, thanks, Tom, for your support. Stay with us, and we'll have the Dave Ramsey Show. Have a great afternoon.